A new command I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this, all men will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another. These are very famous verses. They've been made into songs. They've become memory verses. They're very famous. They're also very popular. Obviously, they're popular with Christians. They're our marching orders, the battle cry from Jesus. Love one another. They're not just popular with Christians, though. They're popular with people who aren't Christian as well. There are lots of people who would say that Christians have ruined Jesus' message. They've distorted it and changed it. When you get right down to it, they say, what Jesus is really on about is teaching us to love one another. That's the basic message, and everything else that Christians speak about, the cross and sin and all that sort of stuff, is just garbage. And they point to a verse like this and they say, see, this is what it's all about, love. Don't try and tell me any of that other mumbo jumbo you think is important. And in saying that, they think they understand Jesus. Not only that, they think they can actually follow Jesus' teaching. They figure they don't need to read everything else that Jesus says. They don't need to read the other things that the Bible's saying. They don't need to be Christian. They can just get on and love one another. If we read Jesus' words closely, though, if we look carefully at what he's saying, we'll see that unless we understand Jesus' other words, unless we understand what else the Bible is telling us about Jesus, we will never be able to love like Jesus is calling us to love here. We'll never capture just how radical Jesus' words are. We'll never understand what love truly is. And so today, we're going to break down Jesus' words when he says, as I have loved you, so you must love one another. We're going to ask four questions. If you're taking notes, you might want to write down these four headings. We're going to ask, who has loved us? Or who is Jesus really? That's the first question. Who's loved us? Secondly, how has he loved us? Thirdly, what should we do? And finally, how should we do it? So it's who's loved us, how's he loved us, what should we do, how should we do it? So firstly, who's loved us? Who is this man saying, as I have loved you, so you must love one another? I mean, obviously it's Jesus, but what's so significant about it being Jesus? Quite simply, Jesus is the most important person in existence. There is no one greater. There is no one more significant. Kids, in the first box, I want you to draw Jesus on his throne above the entire world because he is the king of the world. So draw him big and high and mighty. He's the king of the world. He's the most important. Now, to Australians, it doesn't sound very special that Jesus is so important. We don't like important people as a rule. It's the tall poppy syndrome. And yet even us Australians, though, can have some idea about how special it can be to be loved by someone important. Now, we've got the Mars factory up the road here. Mars is the sixth largest privately held company in the US. It has annual sales of $33 billion. If the president of Mars Incorporated, Grant Reed, got on a jet and flew over from America and walked up to someone on the factory floor over in the Mars factory and greeted them by name, shook their hand and said, hey, do you mind if I duck outside and wash your car? You'd feel pretty special, wouldn't you? Be pretty amazing. Well, imagine 2,000 years ago. The disciples are all at dinner. And they know that with Jesus, they're in the presence of someone pretty important. They don't know how important yet, but they know he's important. Can you imagine their shock when Jesus gets up and does the job that is only reserved for the lowliest of low slaves, washing their feet? Now, you've got to have a bit of context here. In those days, they didn't sit at the dinner table. They reclined. The table would be really low, and everyone would be resting on their left elbow. with their head in close to their table and their feet coming out away from it. So everyone's lying around the table like that. And people wore sandals in those days and walked on dirt roads. So the feet could get pretty foul. As I said before, only the lowliest slave would do the washing of people's feet. If they were going to do it, though, all the feet were there to be washed as a kind of outside smelly ring around the table. And Jesus gets up, he gets dressed like a slave, and he starts washing the disciples' feet. And Peter says, "Whoa, hang on, Jesus. Are you going to wash my feet?" As if to say, hang on, shouldn't I be washing your feet? Because Peter knows that Jesus is really, really important. Jesus doesn't deny it. Have a look at verse 13. Verse 13, he says, "You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet." Now, Lord there just means master or boss. Jesus is saying, you know, I'm important. And if I'm so important and I can do this, then you should be able to as well. And yet they still didn't know how important Jesus actually is. After Jesus has got back to his spot, he drops a big hint about how important he really is. Here he tells them all what's about to happen. He tells them the future before it happens. He tells them how he's going to be betrayed. He even tells John who's going to betray him. And he tells them exactly what's going to happen. And the reason that he tells them is so that they'll know who he is. Have a look at verse 19. Verse 19, "I am telling you now before it happens, so that when it does happen, you will believe that I am he." Now, if you were here with us in term 4 last year and you got stuck into the Old Testament book of Isaiah, then alarm bells should be ringing in your head. Because throughout Isaiah, God, the one true God, the one called Yahweh, which means I am, he keeps telling the future. He tells the future so that when it comes true, you can know he really is God. He's really in charge of the world. He really is the divine controller of human destiny. Just to refresh your memories, here's a sampler from Isaiah 43, verse 10. God says, "You are my witnesses, declares the Lord, and my servant whom I have chosen, so that you may know and believe me and understand that I am he." Picking up Jesus' words. "Before me no God was formed, nor will there be one after me." Everything God said in Isaiah came true, proving that he is the only God. Everything that Jesus said about how he would be betrayed and killed and raised to life came true, proving that he really was the only God. He is the great I am. He is Yahweh. Besides him, there is no other. This wasn't just some great teacher washing the disciples' feet. It wasn't some super special CEO or politician or member of the royal family. This was God in the flesh, the most important being in the universe, picking the dirty, the sweaty, caked on dirt out from under Peter's toenails. That's who Jesus means when he says, "As I have loved you, so you must love one another." Well, how does Jesus love us? How does Yahweh love us? How does God love us in Jesus? He loves us by not caring about his own needs. He puts his needs aside and he cares for our needs. He sacrifices his own needs and puts ours first. Kids, in the second box, in box number 2, I want you to draw a picture of Jesus with his crown on, but washing a disciple's foot. You can make it a really dirty foot. How dirty it is up to you. But that's what I want you to draw. Jesus with his crown on washing one of the disciples' feet. On the night that Jesus says these words, it seems pretty obvious how Jesus loved his disciples. He washes their feet. He puts aside his own need for clean hands and some basic dignity and puts their need for clean feet first. He picks the scum out from under their toenails. He scrubs the sweaty build-up between their toes. He cleans the grime out of their short foot hairs. Here's an interesting fact. 12% of Americans have some kind of toenail fungus. Thankfully, none of the disciples were Americans. But if they had the same statistics, then roughly 3 of the 24 feet that Jesus cleaned that night had toenail fungus. Jesus cleans all 24 feet. Yahweh cleans 24 disgusting human feet. God in the flesh uses his fleshly hands to clean the foul feet of his disciples. How loving for Jesus to clean these feet. And yet, the dirt on the feet is not the most disgusting thing about the job that night. Now, the most disgusting thing about the job that night is whose feet are being cleaned. Jesus is about to face his most horrific hour. This is the night before he dies. He's about to face his most horrific, his most terrifying, his most lonely hour. And here he is, surrounded by his closest friends, and as Jesus washes his disciples' feet, he knows that every single one of them is going to abandon him within just a few short hours. One of them, the one who seems to be the strongest, or at least he likes to tell people that he's the strongest, that's Simon Peter, puts on a brave face. He's going to deny even knowing Jesus 3 times. He'll call down curses on himself. And he said, I've never even met the man. Another one, Judas Iscariot, is going to leave the room in just a few moments to go and betray Jesus, to show Jesus' enemies where to find him so that they can crucify him. How loving for Jesus, God in the flesh, to clean the feet of these men who have such filthy souls. He puts aside the anger that he rightly feels towards them, and he cares for them. And yet, cleaning the feet of these men is not the most loving thing that Jesus does. No, it's just a sign pointing to the real act of love. It's just the warm-up act to the main gig. It's the tiny act of love that sets the stage for the massive act of love to come. The big act of love comes the next day, where Jesus doesn't just wash the feet of the men who honour him with their lips but deny him by their actions, who love him when things are good but flee when times are tough. The real act of love is when Jesus goes to the cross to take on himself the punishment that those wicked men deserve. He lays aside his life so that they can have life. He lays aside their dignity so he can restore their dignity. He takes on himself the punishment for sin so they can be free from sin. And he doesn't just do it for those men. He does it for the whole world. For anyone who believes in him and is willing to submit to him as Lord and Saviour, he dies for them. He dies for us. This is God in the flesh doing the most undignified thing possible in order to care for us, in order to love us. This is the power of what Jesus means when he says, as I have loved you, so you must love one another. So if that's how Jesus loves, how should we love? When he says, as I have loved you, so you must love one another. Obviously, we can't die in each other's place. Jesus has already done it, and we're not qualified to do it. So how should we be loving? We should love like Jesus by giving up our needs in order to serve the needs of others, giving up our rights to care for others, giving up our dignity in order to dignify others. So kids, in box 3, this is what I want you to draw. Instead of drawing Jesus, I want you to draw you. I want you to draw yourself cleaning someone else's feet. You've got to make the feet just as dirty as they were before. Put yourself in that position. Think about it. Jesus stepped down from the absolute highest place. Seated on his throne in heaven, there is no more important position. And he took on himself the most shameful position imaginable. He exchanged the glory of heaven for the shame of the cross, swapped his position where he was seen to be pure and holy for a position where he was labelled a sinner worthy of death. He deserved to be honoured by all those he came to, but he was spat on, mocked, tortured, and killed by them. Also, he could save us. That is sacrificial love. And if that's the way that he's loved us, and if we need to love like he loved us, then there is absolutely no job that we could do that is too lowly or too dirty or too debasing. There is nothing that we could do for someone else that is more shameful or more taxing or more painful than what Jesus has already done for us. And that's why Jesus says in verse 13, "You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that's what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. I tell you the truth, no servant is greater than his master, nor is a messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed if you do them." So whatever needs doing, do it. Of course, Jesus isn't talking about loving everyone here. He does that in other places. Here, though, Jesus is talking about loving other Christians. He's talking about a special love for those Jesus has saved. So loving the Christians you're at church with, loving other Christians in Australia, loving other Christians around the world. As we love each other, as we care for each other, as we sacrificially give up what we want for the sake of other Christians, non-Christians will look and see that we belong to Jesus because we really are loving one another. The non-Christian world talks about love, but they're hopeless at it. They're really, really hopeless. Every so often they get a glimpse of the way that Christians care for each other and they're absolutely bowled over. When I was at Bible college, a lot of the students and their families lived in units next to each other, houses next to each other. Janice was pregnant with William at the time. And we went up to the hospital for a checkup. And the midwife said to us, she wanted to just check about our support networks for after the baby was born. And she said, "Do you have family close by?" And we said, "Oh, no, not really. But we live in this strange sort of community up the road, this Bible college thing." And she said, "Oh, more college? Oh, they love each other so well. They always look after each other. You'll be fine." She just knew it straight away. Jesus says in verse 35, "By this all men will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another." Our love needs to reflect the love of the Christ who saved us and who we serve. So how should we do that? What sort of things should we do? What should we give up for other Christians? Well, everything, really. So kids, for the last box, I'm going to give you four pictures. Four pictures are going to come up the screen, up on the screen. You can draw them. They might give you ideas of what you can draw for the four ideas that I'm going to give of things that we can give up. So we should give up our time. That's one thing we can give up. I remember years ago on Beach Mission, one lady had come down with a gastro bug and she was lying in some shade somewhere on the far north coast where we had Beach Mission. And we had some free time. Fantastic. We'd been working hard and we were at a beachside town. There was so much to do. We could go and relax. We could go and play. When I got back from free time, I found out that my mate Duff, that was his nickname, I think, had done something different. Duff had gone and sat with the lady who was feeling very sick and very tired, and he just read her the Bible. He'd given up his free time in order to serve her. He could have done all sorts of things, but that's what he chose to do. Have you ever gone and prayed with someone who's sick, or just sat with someone who's sad, or hung out with someone who's lonely? It's awfully inconvenient. Not nearly as inconvenient as going to the cross was for Jesus, though. So joyfully, give up your time. Not begrudgingly, but lovingly. You can also give up your resources, like money. Think about this. There are Christians in the world who don't have access to any Bible. Or possibly there might be one Bible to go around the church, for the whole church. There are Christians in the world who are forced to become refugees just because they follow Jesus. We've seen that in Iraq this year, haven't we? These are our Christian brothers and sisters. We need to consider their problems our problems. We need to, it's just like Jesus considered our problem of sin and death his problem. He made it his own. He took on our problem. We need to take on the problems of our Christian brothers and sisters. You can support an organization like Open Doors, which provides for the needs of persecuted Christians, or another one that our family supports is Barnabas Fund. Even in this church, it was wonderful at the weekend away last year that some people who were able to give money to make sure other people could afford to go. It was just wonderful that so many came forward to give that money, and it made it possible for many to go. Give up your resources, like money, like food. Make a meal for someone else who needs it. Here's a little tip for making a meal. Never ask someone if they want a meal. Just tell them that you're going to make a meal, because when you ask, they say, oh, no, we'll be right. And, you know, they can probably get by. But just tell them, no, I'm going to bring around a meal. What time can I come around? And they usually say yes, and they're pretty thankful for it. You can pray for people. Praying is good. How much time do you spend praying for Christians who aren't you or aren't part of your family? Love is other person-centered, so spend time praying for others. And last one, last idea, you probably have others. Sometimes loving someone means telling them something that they need to hear, even though it may hurt them, even though it may be hard for them, even though it may put you in danger of being rejected by them. If they need to hear it, then love them by telling them in a loving, gentle way. Just like Jesus lovingly tells us what we need to hear. Jesus is God in the flesh. He came down from his throne of glory and humbled himself to death on a cross in order to save sinners. We will not be able to love unless we understand who he is and what he's done for us. Once we do understand that, though, oh boy, that just opens the floodgates of love, doesn't it? Not the ooey-gooey, mushy, romantic sort of love, but real love, self-sacrificial love, self-denying love, love like Jesus loved. Jesus said to us, "A new command I give you, love one another. As I have loved you, so you must love one another. By this all men will know that you are my disciples, if you love one another." So let's pray.